The format of this meeting is 2 10-minute speakers, followed by our information break, and then our main speaker, who will speak for 30 minutes. Our first 10-minute speaker is Aleya. Aleya.
Hi, my name is Eyal. I'm an alcoholic. I'll give you some stats. Atlantic Group is my home group. I'm happy to be in a big room tonight. I have a sponsor. His name is Ron B. I'm working steps 9 through 12. Sobriety date is 12/31/2011. And I'd like to thank the Atlantic Group. I'd like to thank my first sponsor, Scott M., my sponsor, Ron B., and Sion for bringing me into the program. Let me start with the first time I had a drink. First time I had a drink, I was 14 years old. I was a freshman in high school. And it was in the spring, and we were having something called class night. And it was like freshmen and sophomores versus each other in sport activities, and then juniors and seniors. Afterwards, there was a party. It was the first party I ever went to in high school. So I get to the party, and it was only me and a few freshmen there. Most of the guys there are like, and the girls there are mostly juniors and seniors. So a buddy of mine was selling beer. So I figured, hey, you know, maybe I should buy some beer so at least I can mix in and I don't know what else to do. So I bought like 2 beers, and I drank them, and I drank them pretty fast. And I couldn't believe how good I felt. I mean, I never felt like that ever. I mean, all the fear, anxiety was just lifted from me right there at that moment. It was great. It was a great feeling. I still remember it today very intimately. And I started socializing, which was like a new thing. I started talking to seniors and juniors. I started talking to girls. I was like, wow, this beer is unbelievable. I wish I would have discovered this before, you know? And every Friday night, up until that night, I was always nervous because I always had to go to work at my dad's store in Canal Street back in 1981. If anybody lived in New York City back then, if anybody knows what it was like back then, it was pretty dangerous. The police never used to come down. They only stayed in Park Avenue. They never came down where you needed them, you know, which was downtown Manhattan and other parts of Manhattan. And every Friday night, I would just get, I'd have a sweat. I'd be sweating. I'd have anxiety attacks. And, you know, but I didn't have it that night. So that night, I went back home. I jogged back home. I was super happy to go to work. I felt pretty good to be home. I wanted to be home early so I can go out the next day and do the same thing. That way I don't get grounded. But then my brother, he told my parents, because I told my brother, guess what? I discovered beer. It's great. It's awesome. And then my dad asked him, was Al drinking? I never seen him this happy, you know? And he's like, yeah, he told me he drank 2 beers. And then my parents really cut into me that morning. You know, I'm a people pleaser. I always wanted to be the good son. Always wanted to look good in front of people, especially in front of the family. I come from an old school family. And it meant a lot to them, so I really cared about how people thought of me all the time, you know. But growing up, you know, I always had issues with character defects and bedevilments. You know, I'm a very envious person. Even when I was a kid, I had it. I was jealous of my younger brother. You know, I was like 3, and he was like 2, I guess. And he started walking, and I would push him down, you know. And my parents would tell me that. You know, my mom said I was the worst kid ever, you know. You know, so my drinking didn't really take off until I got out of high school. When I got out of high school, I would drink in high school a little bit, but, you know, not that much. You know, because I didn't want to get caught. So finally, when I decided to pick a college, I picked a college that was 5 hours away from where I lived. It was a small state school in upstate New York. And it was in Playboy's top 10 list for best party schools. And that was good for me. You know, I wanted to get away from this rut. I wanted to try something different. So I went up there, and then my drinking started to take off. It started with just drinking on the weekends. You know, Friday night, Saturday night, you know, a tad on Sunday, but mostly like that. After 1 year, I was in academic probation. And my dad told me, real simple, you fail out, you're not going back to school, you're going to work. So then I started, you know, hitting the books. So I kept my drinking, you know, to the weekends only, and started concentrating on my studies. But then when I got into the last semester, the last half of the semester, where there was no way I could fail out, I was wrapping up my college career, I started drinking every day. I knew all the drink specials. It was a small town. You know, they had 10-cent drafts on Tuesdays, 25-cent pitchers on Wednesdays. I mean, you know, me and my drinking buddy at the time, we knew exactly where to go get the cheapest liquor we could. And that's pretty much how it went. And then when I got out of college, I decided I don't want to drink anymore because I wanted to be a successful businessman. And I really related to this one story in the Big Book about this one person. He wanted to be a successful businessman. He decided to be successful, he had to stop drinking. He stopped drinking for 25 years. And then after 25 years, he retired. And then he drank himself to death within 4 years. I really relate to that character. That was the first person I related to in the Big Book. Because I could really see that's how my drinking was in the beginning of my career, my business career. I drink on weekends, I drink on holidays. I wouldn't really drink while I was working. Because, you know, I said, hey, I gotta stay focused here at work because I don't want to lose what I have. And so I was also a natural workaholic. It's easy to numb myself out. It's easy to work 10, 11, 12 hours. It's easy to do that because it's hard for me to live. It was hard for me to go to family events. It was hard for me to socialize with people. And hiding at work all the time was an easy way to look legitimate in front of everybody. Oh, this guy's so dedicated. It fed my ego, you know. So what happened was, as time went on, my drinking started to get a little bit worse. So to fast forward, basically, I lost my business. I got divorced. And then I started drinking because now I had no distractions. I really had nothing to do. I had no job. I had nowhere to get distracted, so I'd have to live or I'd have to drink, and I decided to start drinking. And I was drinking a lot, I was drinking heavily, you know, and I couldn't really hold down a drink anymore. It wasn't two or three drinks, I got a buzz now, and that was like double vodka, cranberry, 8 or 9 of those, and I'd be obliviated, you know. And a good friend of mine told me I was an alcoholic, and I didn't really believe that I was an alcoholic because I didn't drink every day. But when I did go drinking, I couldn't control it, you know. So one night, it was a Wednesday night before Thanksgiving. That's a big club night, you know. If anybody goes to clubs, nobody's got to work that weekend. So I figured, you know, I'm going to go out. I'm going to have 2 drinks, meet a nice lady, and then, you know, have a good time. Well, I go to the bar. I didn't meet any ladies. I met 2 bartenders. I remember the first drink, then I don't remember drinks 2 to 7, but I remember the receipts I was looking at, so I'm like, you know, I better stop drinking, so let me go to the other side of the bar, and then I met that bartender, and I got another 2 drinks, and I couldn't even barely, you know, I don't know what to do now, so I decided to drive home, which wasn't a good idea, but I waited a little bit, but I drove home, and I made it home, thank God, and I get home, and I knew what was going to happen, I knew I was going to puke. You know, because I knew I drank too much, and I did. I puked, and then I said, I think I got a problem. But I still wasn't convinced. So what happened was my friend Sion, you know, he's a pretty sharp guy. He tricked me into coming to an AA meeting, to the Tuesday meeting. And he goes, you know, AA is a great place to meet women. I was like, really? Women go to AA? I always thought it was like a bunch of guys in their 60s, 70s doing nothing, sitting around the circle. So he brings me to the Tuesday meeting. I was like, wow, he's right, you know. So I sit down. I try to not get in anybody's way so nobody would know who I am. And then people start coming up to me. Are you new? Are you new to this? I'm like, oh, my God, they're on to me. They know I'm not an alcoholic, you know. So I sat there, and I listened to 3 speaker meeting like tonight. And I didn't relate to everything the speaker said, but there was a couple of parts I did relate to. And I felt safe here. I felt it's a warm place, and I felt safe. So then I started coming a couple times a week, like Tuesday and Thursday. And I really didn't understand why I was coming, but something was bringing me here, you know. And eventually I got a sponsor. I don't really know what a sponsor was. I didn't really know how it worked. But I took it because everybody else had one. So I figured I would just do the program. So I got to wrap it up, so I'll make it quick. So I didn't do the program really the first year. I was acting like a dry alcoholic, which basically is I'm coming to meetings, I'm not drinking, but I'm not doing anything else. Then when I decided to start doing the work, because I had an anxiety attack, and for no reason, I called my sponsor. I'm like, yo, I just got an anxiety attack. He didn't pick up the phone. I left him a voicemail. Then he gave me. Then he called me and left me a voicemail and says, welcome to alcoholism. Now we can start the work. So I started doing the work, and I didn't do it perfectly, but I was progressing, you know, slowly and steady, but slowly, because I didn't, you know. But I could say today, after 4 years, you know, I'm happy to wake up in the morning. I'm happy to socialize. I'm happy to do fellowship, you know, and I have a peace of mind. Not every day is perfect, you know, but I'll tell you, I have some great days these days. And if I have bad days, I have tools now. Call some guys, go to a meeting, talk to my sponsor, you know. So that's all I have. So thank you, everybody.
Our second 10-minute speaker is Alba.
Thanks. Hello, I'm Alba. I'm an alcoholic. Thank you. It's really good to be here. See many familiar faces. Well, start with the beginning. My sobriety date is January 19, 2007. And a little over 9 years ago, I came into this room and I sat all the way in the back. And I had just got to be 90 days. And so they ask, what is your day count here, right? And I stood up and I said, 90 days. And that for me was the beginning to really a second chance at what I call life. What a chance to give something other than what I was doing to myself when I was in active alcoholism. In January 19, 2007, I woke up at Bellevue, and I was strapped down to a gurney with IVs coming out of my arms. There was charcoal in my fingernails, and a very kind, loving doctor was looking down at me, and he asked me, why did I do it? And I had no idea what he was talking about. Because I was 30 years old, and I had started drinking at around 20. And the first time I drank, what I was experiencing is what I know now to be a physical allergy. At 20 years old, when I went out with my boyfriend, and we went out to dinner, and we had a bottle of wine, something changed. I was dressed nicely, and it wasn't anything outside of like a nice dinner. And then he dropped me off, and then I went in my car, and I drove back into the city by myself, because I wasn't done yet. I had no idea what was happening to me, a physical allergy. So for the next 10 years, began my descent to what I understand now. I was dying of alcoholism. This physical, this mental, this spiritual disease, I was dying. And I didn't know that I was dying. So I continued, 20, 21, 22. Every day for that decade, I drank. And it just looked ugly. One of my friends, who's no longer with us, once told me that this is a shameful disease. And when I was new, I started hearing a lot of things like that, that in the beginning I didn't relate to. Because even though I have scars in my body today, all caused by being under the influence in that decade, and I've hurt and damaged others because of my behavior. When I came into these rooms, I still wasn't quite sure that I belonged here. But what kept me staying was I would hear your stories, and I related, I identified. And the other thing I heard, which kept with me, was alcohol is the biggest thief. And alcohol will bring you to your knees, and alcohol will make your worst nightmare come true. And guess what? It happened to me. My worst nightmare was being institutionalized in a mental institution and my freedom being taken away from me. And that's where I woke up January 19, 2007. But that wasn't the first time. That was the first time someone called 911. If there's anything that I can say for anyone that was like me, that's not sure about God, that's not sure about your higher power, that's not sure about what it is, make it simple. This is what I did. I got a sponsor, and I still did things my way, and I learned really, really fast that I was still in what I called untreated alcoholism. Even though I was showing up, I couldn't connect to something greater than me. Until I started working the 12 steps. It's in this room of Alcoholics Anonymous that I learned how to be a civil human being. I learned how to show up. I learned how to send the Mother's Day card to my sister. You know, those little things that I wasn't able to do. And maybe that doesn't mean something because I'm not, it means everything to me today. I'm able to do things where I now think of others. The others come first. You and what you're saying to me, I value. And my life has changed. But going back to what I do is, I went through the steps again at 7 years with my sponsor. And I was able to look again of all the things that I've done to others prior to coming into sobriety and then also when I was untreated. And the things I did to others was all based on myself, and it was, I was still in tremendous amount of pain. I can tell you that my life today is very different from that girl, that scared girl that almost died that day. I didn't know that I was dying of alcoholism, but if you're in here today and you think that you have a physical allergy, pick up the book if you're afraid to talk to someone. And the doctor's opinion helped me so much because I understood what it was, that when I drink, my eyes change. That when I drink, I do terrible things to others and myself. I didn't know that I was dying. And I say that again and again because alcoholism is a deadly disease. And if you are in here today, then you have a chance. You have a chance for a second chance to life. So today, nothing comes before me and you here in this room. Without me being here, I can't be what I need for others. And that's not only about being here and taking up a seat. That's being here, and when something comes up, I call my sponsor, so I'm not that person I used to be, even in sobriety. And when you ask me to do something for you, you better believe it, I'll be there. And I can look anyone in their eyes today, and I have a straight back, and I am self-sufficient, and I have everything. Actually, I had no idea that I can have this life, because I was living in the shadows. So, I don't take this seat for granted. I am not perfect, and I have a long way to go. But I am so grateful today that in 9 years and 4 months that I'm standing in front of you as a sober woman that think of others. I can spend my day with my family and my mother, and she comes first before any ideas of egos that might have come before this. And I learned how to be this through Alcoholics Anonymous and going through the 12 steps. So please, today, if you're here and you were like me, you have a chance. You have a chance to have a life. You have a chance, a second chance of life. At least that's what happened to me. Thank you for my sobriety.